Thank you for coming to the podcast. This is Top Turtle MMA Podcast on GeeksidePress.com. I'm Dana Gubby-Reeland, joined as always by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. The UFC is back in the apex this weekend for UFC Vegas 90, headlined by Brendan Allen versus Chris Curtis 2. We'll, of course, be breaking down that fight as well as two other of our favorite fights on this main card as part of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays, where we'll also give you an underdog and a parlay that we think will make your wallet fat this weekend. And in addition to that, we are bringing you the interviews you know and love. Kicking off the show this week is Chepe Mariscal before his upcoming UFC Vegas 90 fight. And then, a little bit later on, we'll be talking to Michael Dufort, who is fighting at PFL 2 next Thursday. But before we get to any of that great content, I do have to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should you stretch before you drink it? Certainly couldn't hurt, because Game Up's not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own and comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors. Orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape. And it hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak-bagging badasses, tough motor mothers, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole hawkers, or even just professional poolside posters who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up wherever you should buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, joining me today is Chepe Mariscal, who fights Morgan Charrier at UFC Vegas 90. That fight is on April 6th. So, Chepe, before we get to talking about that upcoming fight, I did want to ask you about your last fight, because it ended kind of weird. You got a win over Jack Jenkins, a highly touted prospect. You were looking good in the fight, but it ends with an elbow dislocation, which is not really how anybody wants a fight to end. What were sort of your takeaways from that fight, and how did you leave the fight feeling?
Well, I felt like it was an actually valid win, just because if you look into judo in the Olympics, if you throw somebody and they break an arm, they get an injury from a throw, you obviously the other guy wins. You know, it's not like, oh no, you're DQ'd, okay, this broken arm guy gets medaled. Like, no, it's all right, he lost, the next guy is up. So that's how I looked at it, is, he obviously didn't defend the throw properly. And this, it was either take the throw, give up his head or his shoulder or an arm. And he chose the arm. And yeah, man, it was obviously it was his pick, and his arm couldn't take his weight and my weight. So obviously something was going to break or dislocate. And yeah, man, and then obviously, as you can see, I was still in action. I still was fighting. Even with the throw, I was still trying to be active. So get the job done.
I like that. I like that mentality a lot now, too. I did want to ask you, though, because, that is, like you said, a valid technique, and it's something that's completely legal and obviously gets you the win. But, we didn't see that much. I mean, I guess we saw plenty of grappling from you in the Trevor Peak fight, but, it seems like you were more ready to let your hands go in that fight maybe than the Jack Johnson fight, and you were a little bit more reliant on the wrestling. Was that kind of the way you saw the fight going in?
Well, the thing is, if you see the second round, I started throwing hands. I started engaging, He's the one who started tying up with me. I even watched my film, and I was like, look, he grabbed me. And the way a judoka, black belt judoka, responds is, if you grab me, I'm going to grab you. And that's where you brought it. I threw a couple hooks at him when he was on the cage. He grabbed me, so I went into my chain wrestling and, try to figure out him out there. And yeah, man, I was ready to test his striking. As you can see, I have, out of my 5 wins right now, I have 4 finishes in the second round. I like to taste a little bit what they got. And I felt like the second round I was giving the heat, you know, I was slowing him down. I knew his breathing was changing when I was putting pressure on him on the cage. I knew he was panicking. I knew he was not, he had nobody pressure him like that on the cage, not nobody on anybody his spot. So I felt like if I change up the style, you know, make this an MMA fight, not just a striking fight, because I'm here to display a great show of mixed martial arts. And that's what I did. I threw elbows. I threw kicks. I threw everything that you could see in an MMA fight. And just to, you know, put the cherry on top, I added a throw. And you know, what's awesome is that throw got me the win.
And I love this look into your mentality, too, because this thought process of, if they grab me, it is like an open challenge and I'm going to throw their ass. Like, is that basically, did I encapsulate that right? Anybody who grabs on you is basically asking for a ride?
Yeah, for sure, man. Even my teammates, people that really know me, they know me so well. They don't even give me a hug because they know how, you know, maybe I really will respond, you know. But that was a big thing. Like, I knew my striking was going to make him tie up, first of all. I knew I get guys like that all the time, great strikers. I end up turning them into wrestlers, into guys that want to clinch into my world, which is awesome. You know, like, that's what I was looking for. Exactly. You know, I wanted to taste a little bit of Jack's strikes, even Trevor Peak. Like, even with the Trevor Peak fight, I went out there not really with the game plan, just seeing that he's throwing these crazy strikes and, you know, putting a real MMA fight out there and putting a good show on. And obviously you could see I was trying to finish. I was trying to get rear naked choke. I was trying to get, you know, TKOs, you know, throws to a finish. I was trying to do a push kick to the face, you know, like anything. Like, I was trying to get finishes, and that's what I do. I put nothing but trying to get a finish. If not, then, hey, man, we're going to put on a show.
And that's really what you've been doing for your whole career, too. You know, if you look back at your regional scene record, and I wanted to ask you about it, too, because, first of all, some of the craziest resume I've ever seen on a regional scene, right? Bryce Mitchell, Joey Anderson Brito, Steve Garcia, Yosef Zalal, Pat Sabatini, Gregor Gillespie. We're talking about before you even got to the UFC, man. And the reason I wanted to ask you about this, too, is, you know, we're a couple of months away from the 10-year anniversary of you turning pro. Is it crazy to think about it being that long? Does it feel like it's been much longer? What, you know, give us a little look back into that snippet of time.
Man, to be 100% honest with you, man, it feels like a long time, because it was, you know, I went through wins, losses, even, you know, wins, losses outside of my career. So it's, you know, it was a lot to, you know, readjust, evolve. And, yeah, I just wanted to make it in the UFC, the big shows, you know, at the right time. And I felt like when I was in my young 20s, I wasn't doing the mature and professional decisions. And now, like, I'm mature. And now, you know, I'm at that age where I have to make the proper decisions, the right decisions, and, you know, try to get in the UFC, try to go, you know, take these names, put my name out there as one of the best fighters out there, you know, who puts on a show, who's down to do whatever I got to do to, you know, put my name out there and, you know, hopefully touch a title, or, you know, just be known as that, you know, machine gun of the mixed martial arts world.
I dig that. Now, I'm curious, too, because you said, you know, you're maybe not making some great choices earlier in your career as far as MMA is concerned. Do you mean that with the fights you were taking? Do you mean that with the way you were training, maybe being a little bit more reckless as a little, you know, a younger guy? Well, give us a little snippet. What did you mean by not being at the right time at that point?
I think I was just young, you know. I didn't really have any leaders, you know. I kind of, you know, it was more of like me listening to some of my friends that don't have no experience, that didn't have, you know, the real looking out for me, you know, and even for myself, because end of the day, I'm the guy who says yes or no, you know, and I still am that guy, you know. I'm not going to say no to anybody unless, you know, obviously I have an injury or anything else. So I felt like I had to readjust some things in my life of having people in it. Like, you know, I have a great corner that helps me with some of these decisions, and not like not outside of like my career, like even working on mistakes that I've done in fights, you know, like, oh, I should have not gone for, like, let's say the throw there, or I should have not thrown those punches specifically here, you know, like, here's your bad habits. You know, we kind of, like, even though I hate it, you know, I watch films on myself and I'm like, man, who the hell, like, you know, like, it's like that's how crazy it got, you know, like, I was even shaking. Like, I was like, oh damn, that's like, they're like, okay, we gotta, you know, you put on a show and all that stuff, but now we gotta control this, you know, we gotta control the berserker, you know, we gotta learn how to turn it off, you know. And that's the readjustments I made. I was on a 2 losing streak before my 5 winning streak, and you know, I definitely had to, like, be like, hey, I gotta stop acting like I'm a know-it-all, and I gotta still act like a student, and that's what really helped me out. And yeah, man, I got a lot of finishes, and then got the short notice to fight Trevor Peak, and that was everybody was like, wow, man, like, that's a wild fight to take, because he had 100% finish rate. It was up a weight class, and I was like, man, I was made for fights like this. Like, these are the guys to expose and show, like, there's levels to this shit, and that's why I took it and showed, you know, the people that, well, the fans, MMA fans, and everybody else that's been following me and know of me or don't know of me, but I'm trying to show everybody, like, how much I've evolved and that I belong in the big leagues, the UFC.
And you certainly do. Now, I do want to ask, because you said in there, you know, it was the understanding that you needed to control that you needed to figure out the right way to do things and things like that. Was there something that clicked for you? Was it just, you know, I started getting older and I started to figure these things out of myself? Was there a coach who helped you figure it out? How did you sort of come to these realizations?
Man, it was the big key thing, man. It was patience. I was fighting fights like if it was the end, you know, like if it was like if I had no tomorrow, basically. And that's not what it is. It's about building a strategy, getting a finish, getting the proper finish, you know, pointing out things, how we're going to win, how we're going to do it, what's the mindset, you know. And that's where we kind of really got down to, you know, we got to, instead of just me going out there and fight, we really, I got with my corner, and my corner pulled that trigger of, yeah, we're going to strategize. And like, I like to say, like, I'm a video game, I'm player one, you know, like, tell me what I got to do to finish this guy, and I'll go and try it, or I'll do my own thing. But the whole goal is to, you know, get the finish and get out of here and get, you know, double paycheck, and that's it.
Well, and the next time you're going to get a chance to do that is April 6th. Once again, it's against Morgan Charrier. So I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously he picks up a big body kick KO in his debut. You sound like a real cerebral guy, somebody who's been breaking down opponents, breaking down what you got to do next. So give us a little taste of what you think about this fight stylistically with Morgan.
Man, he's going to be fun. He's obviously has a big resume. He's 19-9. We both fought in Cage Warriors. You know, even Cage Warriors is excited for this fight. I feel like we both fought a lot of, you know, a lot of different guys from different regions. You know, we obviously haven't fought the same guys, but that's what's going to, you know, put that kind of fight out there, you know, who's really, you know, on the right level. And I feel like I am the right level right now. I feel like needs a lot of stuff to readjust and fix, you know, and I'm that kind of guy who will go out there and, you know, put that in Schoenberg. He's weak, and I will show him where I'm strong.
Well, you pretty much led me right into my last question, because I love to end these things with a prediction. So tell me, how do you see this one ending come April 6th?
Man, definitely a TKO.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Chepe Mariscal, who fights Morgan Charrier at UFC Vegas 90. That fight, once again, April 6th. Chepe, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
For sure, man.
Well, if you've enjoyed that interview with Chepe Mariscal, I once again am Daniel Gumby Vreeland, joined now by my co-host Shockwave, Dave Tremonte. Dave, obviously UFC Atlantic City was last weekend. A very exciting card with kind of a anticlimactic main event. It was all one-way traffic. Manon Fiorot stuffed the takedown, shoved away Aaron Blanchfield. Let's get your thoughts on this one. Is Manon Fiorot that good, or is Aaron Blanchfield just kind of that much of a fish out of water when she can't hit those takedowns?
I think it's all of the above. I think Manon Fiorot is that good, and I think it was a very bad stylistic matchup for Erin Blanchfield. I remain high on Blanchfield. I certainly hope that this maybe takes her in a new way, or like an evolution of her fighting game, because clearly when she can't hit those takedowns, you know, there's almost like a bit of like a, you think of a Ronda Rousey type effect where it's like, uh-oh, it can't be that. And that's going to have to improve on her side. But I still like her against a lot of the tops of the division. But Fiorot is her kryptonite, and I don't think anything should be taken away from Fiorot, because let's face it, other than had it gone to the ground, you know, takedown defense and then striking, it just, she's all around better than Blanchfield and world class at those two distinctions. What did you think?
Yeah, I it was more of a tip of the cap to Fiorot for me than it was a knock on Blanchfield, because while I really do think Blanchfield does need to iron out a little bit more of the wrestling, and obviously her hands could come far along, she's young. You know, like there's a little bit of that. It's her first 5-round fight in the UFC. There's a little bit of that, or at least one that went that late for that matter. Whereas Fiorot has like a lot of experience on the regional scene. Obviously, she fought overseas for a while and looked really good in fights over there, fought some high level competition as well. So like, you know, I think Fiorot is like the more just ready prospect, right? She's older. She's more well-rounded. She's, you know, clearly worked on her wrestling game. So, yeah, tip of the cap to Fiorot. I can't wait. Hope she gets that title shot. And, you know, worst case scenario for Blanchfield, we're talking about her fighting like a Rose Namajunas now. And I think, you know, Rose Namajunas, Macy Barber, those kind of people right behind her, I think those are all good matchups for her to kind of figure this out against. And being as young as she is, she's got time.
I agree. All right, well, let's get to our favorite segment on the show. It's Fights, Dogs, and Parlays. We'll break down a couple of fights, give a dog and a parlay to play, and this is all for UFC Vegas 90 going down this weekend. But Gumby, before we get into it, does anyone sponsor this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays?
Absolutely. Fights, Dogs, and Parlays is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your four sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape, and hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team.
All right, we'll start then with the main event. Not really a banger of a main event when, you know, Chris Curtis is in it. No offense to him, but this is not the main event you might be pining for. It's Brandon Allen, a -205 favorite. Chris Curtis, a +170. This is a rematch, Curtis on short notice. So again, maybe not the most stellar matchup to headline a card, but that's the UFC world we live in right now. I'm speaking as a longtime fan who used to really look forward to fight cards and now thinks there's just too many. This would be a perfect example of that, but don't let me be the Debbie Downer on this, because there's always some fun fight on the card. I just don't think it'll be this one. But let's get on to the actual prediction. So Brandon Allen is on a 6-fight win streak with a big win over Paul Craig via rear naked choke back in November of 2023. Also beat Bruno Silva, Andre Muniz, and Christoph Jocko, all via rear naked choke. So not only is he on a 6-fight win streak, he's on a 4-fight win streak of just finishing people with a rear naked choke. Chris Curtis is that classic win a couple, lose a couple. He's 2-2-1 in his last 5, had a no contest in there due to an accidental clash of heads with Nazardine Amavov back in June of 2023. We saw him earlier this year. He's coming off a split decision win over Marc-Andre Barrault, and now taking a short notice fight here as the +170 dog. Who you got?
I'm actually going to go with Chris Curtis as a slight dog. Obviously, he won the first one. He picked up the knockout in that one. I don't think he's got that kind of advantage over Brendan Allen anymore, because Allen has certainly progressed. But I think he has a nice mixture of the things that could frustrate Brendan Allen. You know, we're talking about Chris Curtis, a guy who dealt with the grappling of Rodolfo Vieira by just creating space and staying away from his takedowns. And he did a damn good job of that and picked him apart. You also got the fact that he just can turn up the pace, much like his training partner Sean Strickland. He could also fight a very smart outside fight that makes it quite boring. I think all of that plays really well against Brendan Allen's style, where, you know, he'd like to be really up and close with you and in a phone booth in terms of boxing, and obviously that leads to his takedowns. So with all of those things in place, I do think it favors Chris Curtis. I think he's like kind of smartly an underdog here because it is short notice, but he did knock him out the first time. So give me Chris Curtis here with some big money attached to it.
Boom. Let's also move on then. Alexander Hernandez is a minus 205 favorite. Damon Jackson, a plus 170 dog. Damon Jackson on a two-fight losing streak. Alexander Hernandez also coming off a loss to Bill Algeo back in October of 2023. Beat Jim Miller before that, two losses before that. So he's 1-3 in his last four. Is Alexander Hernandez, but a minus 205 favorite here. Who you got?
I like the favorite Alexander Hernandez. As much as I like Damon Jackson, I think he's going to have a little bit of a hard time keeping Alexander Hernandez down here if he does try for the wrestling. And in terms of the boxing, I just think he stays in front of people too long and is a little bit too hittable. If you watch his last fight, you'll see his head movement wasn't quite there when it needed to be. He throws punches and bunches, but then it winds up, you know, just kind of leaving his head on the center line. And the thing about Alexander Hernandez that gave him trouble with Bill Algeo was just that Bill Algeo moves in a very funky style, moves side to side, cuts weird angles. And I think Damon Jackson is just going to be a far easier version of that, right? He's going to try to cut angles, but not with the funky movement, not with the head movement and all that kind of stuff. And I think you're going to wind up seeing Alexander Hernandez get his striking going a lot better.
All right. We'll move then to two up-and-coming fighters, to say the least. Morgan Scherrer, a minus 135. Shepe Mariscal, a plus 115. Why don't you fill in, people, because you are the prospect master on these two guys and who you have in the fight. Scherrer is a minus 135 favorite. Mariscal, plus 115 dog.
Well, I'm going to take Shepe Mariscal here. I think the thing for me about him is just the experience level this guy's got. Before he even got to the UFC, he had fought Gregor Gillespie. He had fought, you know, Bryce Mitchell. He had fought Pat Sabatini. He had fought Youssef Zalal, Steve Garcia, Joe Anderson Brito, Sean Soriano. All of those guys wound up in the UFC, and that was all before he got to the UFC. The guy has absolutely crazy pace. He put it on Trevor Peak on short notice in his debut. He then slammed Jack Jenkins and broke his arm, which is certainly no small feat. As he mentioned, he's a judoka, he comes from that background here. I think he's got the pace to get in Charrier's face, even if he's a touch less, you know, crisp with his striking. I think Charrier is going to be the sharper striker in this fight, but I think when you add the pace along with the work against the cage and obviously the judo skills that Mariscal brings, I think that kind of edges it in his favor. So I think as a slight dog here, he's a smart play.
All right. Our underdog of the week, official one that is Jermaine Durandamy. Let's hear it.
Yeah, Jermaine Durandamy has been away for a minute. She had a child since the last time we saw her fight, but she's still Jermaine freaking Durandamy. She is somebody who went toe-to-toe with Holly Holm and outboxed her. And now we got her in there against Norma Dumont, somebody who's going to have a little bit less reach, a lot of less boxing than her, and I think is just going to have the worst kind of time with Jermaine Durandamy. Now, obviously, she's an underdog in this fight because people aren't sure what kind of shape she's going to come back in, but the fact of the matter is she's never been somebody who's been, like, crazy high on output, and we have to worry about her cardio. You know, and maybe it takes her around to get her timing going, but it's not like Norma Dumont is somebody who's going to mess with her timing regularly, right? She's fairly straightforward in what we see from her boxing. She doesn't do anything really, you know, out of the norm. I say give it 2 minutes of Jermaine trying to find her hands, and then once she's found them, I think she's going to pick Norma Dumont apart here.
All right, our parlay to play is Gene Matsumoto, a minus 180, and Walter Walker, a minus 340. Big favorite there, but it still gets you plus 101 odds when you combine Matsumoto and Walker. Let's hear it.
Yeah, for me, this is all the wrestling game here. Jan Matsumoto, look, I know Dan Argueta is a good opponent for him here, but I just love the way his wrestling game has looked, both on the regional scene and the Contender Series. I think the way he mixes it with his strikes makes him even more dangerous here than Argueta. So I like Jan Matsumoto quite a bit. For Walter Walker, I know not a lot of people have seen this guy because he's, you know, been on the regional scene in Brazil, largely judo. But when you see him, he's not at all like his brother. His brother, Johnny Walker, you know, kind of a crazy man on the feet. Walter is a plodding forward, big old heavyweight with some sick grappling. I really love his positioning on the mat. I love his double leg. We're going to see him up against Lucas Bresky, a guy Carl Williams took down 8 times. I think Walker is going to rinse and repeat with that strategy there. Get him down, submit him. So I like both of the Brazilians here to get me plus 101.
All right. Well, that does it for this edition of Fights, Talks, and Parlays. Let us know how you think we did. If we did you dirty, did you right with these picks, we want to hear it. At Top Turtle MMA on the social media. Gumby, we're having a party here. What should we do next?
We're going to transition now to my interview with Michael Dufort, who is getting ready for PFL number 2 next Thursday. He'll be fighting in the lightweight division, looking for that $1 million prize. And we're going to get to that interview for you right now. All right, and today is Michael DeFort, who fights Mads Burnell at PFL 2. That fight is on April 12th. So, Michael, I wanted to start here. You know, you're a guy who's traveled kind of all over the world in order to fight. You know, you fought for UAE Warriors, you fought for Ares, but it was your last fight that was kind of your breakthrough, and it was going to a little tiny local show in Plymouth, Massachusetts, you know, in the United States, Cage Titans, and sort of getting to be that villain, getting to be that guy. And it got you noticed. So what sort of led you to make that choice to, you know, not fight in Canada, not fight in, you know, UAE, not, you know, like to decide to fight there instead?
The belt was a big motivation. And the fact that I was fighting in Boston, and I'm from Montreal, and we have that rivalry in Montreal with the Boston Bruins. So I wanted to defend my Habs, my hockey team here. So I went there and defeat their champion.
I love it. Now, I also want to ask too, you know, that's a place, you know, I've seen shows there before. It's a tight arena. It's one of those arenas that, you know, really gets popping because it feels like the fans are right on top of you. How were you received by the crowd? How did you feel like you were doing in that like villain-like scenario?
Oh man, I did okay, I was a bit arrogant, I guess. I went there on the show before to present their next main event. The organization made me come, and he asked me like, "Oh, can you come with a Canadian flag? We want that like that Canada versus United States rivalry." And I was like, "No, I got something better, and I think you'll approve." So the night of the presentation, I came to Boston with a Montreal Canadiens jersey of Nick Suzuki, our captain, and I got booed so much. Honestly, I've never been booed that much in my life. And the next time I went there was for my fight, and during my entrance, man, I was booed so hard, and people were screaming like bad things, and I was like, "Oh shit, they really hate me right now." But the fight only lasts 1 minute 30 seconds, so the booed and the screaming were not there anymore after the fight. Like it was the like you said, the arena is so small and everybody's like in your ear, but man, when I finished that guy, the crowd went silent. The arena got emptied in like a minute. Only people that were left was my fans, my people, my family, the people that were there for me, and was one of the best moments of my life.
Well, that's great to hear. And now, obviously, you've sort of parlayed that into another big moment for you next, which is this fight in PFL. Do you feel like all the hype that went behind, you know, not just fighting, you know, for a belt, but fighting a guy who used to be in the UFC and Joe Giannetti, do you feel like that fight is sort of what propelled you to this PFL chance?
Maybe, we never know. Like, the fact that I'm pretty much with Olivier Aubin-Mercier, the two-time PFL champion, for the last 3 years, I was training with him. He was fighting in the PFL. He was winning everything. He's 10-0. And I think they like my personality. I think they like our energy as a group. So maybe it's a combination of like the fact that I beat this guy, the fact that they like us, the fact that they want someone to be the next Canadian gangster, like who can do best. That better than like the Canadian badass. Like you have like, it's pretty easy to in my brain. It was a no brainer.
Well, and I like that too. And it makes a lot of sense because I was going to bring up the Olivier Aubin-Mercier thing. And you know, he's a guy who's won this exact same tournament, exact same weight class that you're entering two times in a row right now. So what sort of advice is he giving you about, you know, the season format in the, you know, it's a thing that's nowhere else in MMA, and recovery is weird. What is he giving you as far as advice about all that?
Oh, I trained with him the last 3 years. So like, I know how it is. I know that the only thing you don't want is injuries. So, like, you train smart, you do a lot of cardio because it's like one of the most important things. You practice a lot of defense because, like, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Like, you cannot go there, like, do a war for four fight, like, in 6 months. It's crazy. You got to go there patient, smart, and ready for a marathon.
Well, and that's interesting, too. You know, you're saying that it's almost a different style of fighting, right? It's a different mm-hmm. mentality and all of that kind of stuff. How do you feel like this style pairs with what you do? Do you feel like it is a good natural match? Is it something you've had to make adjustments for?
Maybe I got to do some adjustment, but the fact that I'm a finisher too, pretty much, I think can help because when you finish the guy fast, like, you don't get damaged. So that's the spirit. Like, I'm going there to finish my opponent. Like, if you watch my last two fight, like, I didn't get hit once, and I fought like Luis Pena, that's a UFC veteran, and Joe Janetti, that's two of a UFC vet. So, like, I know how to go there, do my job fast, don't take it, and come back home with the win.
Absolutely. And now let's talk about your first opponent, because obviously there's a number of opponents in this division, all of them being very exciting. But the first one you're getting, another UFC veteran in Mads Brunel. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who sort of showed sort of a gritty wrestling style. He's known to kind of make fights a little bit dirtier. And you're mm-hmm. saying right now that's kind of the thing you're trying to avoid. So what did you think when they said, hey, the first person we want you to fight, this guy right here, Mads Brunel?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I know he's a featherweight, and when you get up in a bigger division, it's not the same. Like, you cannot be that dirty boxer. You're not used to got hit by lightweight. You're not hit of that strength. You're not used to what lightweight can bring to the table. Like, featherweight and lightweight are not the same people. Like, I'm bigger than him, I'll be stronger than him, and I think I'll hit harder than him. And he'll realize that pretty fast. That's the plan. The plan is to fucking show him how big and how strong I am, and make him doubt his skills, make him doubt everything. And when he'll start doubting, I'll finish him.
I love that. Now, I want to get to talking about that, your prediction for that fight. But before I do, I got to mention this season in general, right? Because this is a very exciting season. It's mm-hmm. not just PFL. It's Bellator coming over from PFL. So we're talking about, you know, PFL veterans, guys your Olivier Alban-Mercier has fought, like Clay Collard. But we're also talking about guys like Patricky Pitbull in your division now. And we're talking about, you know, like Brett Primus, who's also a big, you know, Bellator guy. So when you look out across this division, and you know you're not looking past Mads Brunel, because that's obviously the first step, who are some of the people who you think about possibly matching up when we're talking about being in the finals of this thing?
Honestly, I haven't watched like who's in the division. I'm all in for Mads Brunel's, and I like you cannot see two fights before to finish the first one. I gotta put all my energy on Mads, and the next guy will be the next guy. But right now, I don't care, and I don't mind like who's in the tournament. Like, I know I am in, and Mads is in. So the 10 other people, or I don't even know how many there's. Like, I don't care. Like, one at a time, and I'll do my thing every fucking fight.
I love it. Now, well, you said, you know, you want to go in there, you want to get that finish, you want to make sure you mm-hmm. make it clean. So I always like to end these things with a prediction. How's this one end come April 12th?
Man, my plan is to do a quick six, but if he's tough enough, I'll finish him in the third, and I'll get my double, my hand raised for sure.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This is Ben Michael Dufour, who fights Mads Brunel at PFL2. Once again, that fight, April 12th. Michael, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks to you, Daniel.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsor, Game Up Hard Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. Until next week, I'm Dana Gubby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. We'll catch you then.